You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. 20 years ago, the television series Buffy the Vampire Slayer hit the airwaves. The show ran for 7 seasons and followed title character Buffy as she fought demons and vampires with her high school friends in Sunnydale, California, the site of the Hellmouth.
But the show didn't just chronicle the friends' adventures. The series tackled a whole range of themes, including feminism, sexuality, authoritarianism, and more, under a veil of sometimes campy fun.
James South joins us now to talk about the Buffy anniversary. He's an associate professor of philosophy at Marquette University and co-editor of the book Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Philosophy, Fear and Trembling in Sunnydale. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, what first got you into the Buffyverse?
Well, I had a lot of friends telling me I should watch the show, and I thought it sounded really silly. And the next thing I knew, I started watching it. And before I knew what had happened, I was starting to write about it. And it's the first TV show that had ever made me think about writing about it. So that's what got me started, was just watching it.
Your main academic area, as I understand, is medieval and Renaissance philosophy. What is it about a show like Buffy the Vampire Slayer that, from a pop culture angle, can get us talking and thinking about philosophical issues?
Well, I think you mentioned them all in the introduction. The questions of authoritarianism, the questions of racism and sexism, and misogyny, all of those sorts of topics, the role of friendship versus family, choosing your friends, choosing your family. There are so many questions that get raised in that context that over the course of 7 seasons, the show just explores in incredible detail.
The show on the one level could be seen as pretty campy. I mean, the setup is pure camp. You've got this girl who's sort of on the cheerleader track, only she ends up being chosen to slay vampires and fight back forces of evil. It sounds like it's just going to be fun, but then the show ends up tackling serious topics and it ends up making them feel really resonant and real. How does it walk both those lines?
Well, it works on multiple levels. I mean, there's the surface level of the dialogue, the wittiness, the neologisms, the way they come up with words to talk about. I mean, there's actually a book out there called Slayer Slang, written by a linguist that talks about just how inventive the language is and the way they converse with one another in a kind of shorthand that also pulls the viewer in. But then underneath that, there's really serious things going on. The town is in peril. There are vampires. There are monsters. There are demons. And there's the underlying basic metaphor, which is, at least at the beginning of the series, that high school represents hell.
Let's give a listen to a little bit of the show on a theme of sacrifice. A pivotal scene, a 5th season, I believe, Buffy, spoiler alert to those who haven't watched, sacrifices herself to save her, spoiler alert, sister Dawn. Here's the speech that Buffy gives to her sister.
Tell Giles I figured it out, and I'm okay. I give my love to my friends. You have to take care of them now. You have to take care of each other. You have to be strong. Dawn, the hardest thing in this world is to live in it. Be brave. Live. For me.
So issues of sacrifice, bravery, duty to others, carrying on after tragedy. I mean, you can go back to ancient Greece to find this philosophy, too. And here it is on this lighthearted TV show.
Well, that's right. And you know, my contribution to the Buffy and philosophy book was actually about Buffy and Greek tragedy. I mean, I think the line in that scene that's so resonant is the line that the hardest thing in this world is to live in it. That's not something you expect from a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's not something one knows how to process when one first hears it. It's something one has to think about and think about deeply to get the full ramifications of the meaning of that line.
And the other remarkable thing, well, one of many, I guess, is that the protagonist is a girl, and she's a young woman growing up, and you've got her. She's really tough, but on the other hand, her name is Buffy, so you're invited not to take her seriously, and yet you have no choice to take her seriously on the other hand.
Well, that was always the ironic premise of the show, was instead of it being, a typical male hero who's going around saving the day, a superhero like Batman or Superman or something like that, it's this petite valley girl with this unique slang, with this unique take on the world, with an insouciance. At the end of the very first two-part pilot, she's wondering how she can get kicked out of school, and she talks about how important it's going to be to excessively not study, right? So, but yet she is literally, she's got the weight of the world on her shoulders. There's an episode, called Weight of the World, and she just has to fight and fight and fight and fight.
It's the 20th anniversary of the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, punched above its weight class, had a big influence on American popular culture. Talking to James South from Marquette University, a philosophy professor there, co-editor of the book Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Philosophy. You mentioned that pilot. I want to give a listener, I don't want to give the idea for people who haven't seen the show that it's all serious sacrifice and heroism. Here's a listen to Buffy meeting the librarian, who's more than he seems, Mr. Giles.
I believe this whole area is a center of mystical energy. The things gravitate towards it that you might not find elsewhere.
Like vampires.
Like zombies. Werewolves. Incubi. Succubi. Everything you've ever dreaded was under your bed but told yourself couldn't be by the light of day. They're all real.
What? You like Sent Away for the Time Life series?
Yes.
Did you get the free phone?
The calendar.
Go.
And there's a lot of back and forth, the serious and the funny, and the, as you mentioned, the dialogue and the relationships are a big part of the appeal, James.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, a scene like that where you see Giles, just so excited about the supernatural and Buffy playing it so casual, and yet what Giles has done is really silly. It's an offer of the Time Life series on on monsters, right? So,
how much do you think Joss Whedon, how much credit should he get for making the show what it was? Because I can see an alternate universe in which the show was really, really bad and it tried to do these things, but it just didn't work. But somehow the dialogue is so snappy and the issues feel real. They don't feel forced. How much credit should we give Joss?
Well, I mean, there is a world in which this is a bad, campy movie, right? I mean, there had been a movie several years before with the same name, and it wasn't a good movie, right? So, I mean, I think he's the driving force. He's the one who captured the language initially. He captured the tone. He directed some of the early central episodes. But then he also had this amazing ability to pull talent into the circle of the show. And he got this great stable of writers who would just, take an idea of his and run with it, come up with their own ideas, and he would tweak them and make sure everything was consistent. I mean, this really is sort of the beginning of auteur television in many ways. It's his show all the way through. No matter how much the other writers are involved, no matter how much other people direct episodes, it's his vision, it's his voice, it's his message, right?
We're talking to James South right now. He's an associate professor of philosophy at Marquette University, and we're talking about the groundbreaking series Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It debuted 20 years ago.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Do you have memories of discovering this series as James did, as I did, having serious misgivings but getting sucked in anyway? What lessons did you take away from the show? And have you chosen one in the next generation to share the show with yourself? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time.
I've got a theory that it's a demon, a dancing demon. Nah, something isn't right there.
I've got a theory, some kid is dreaming, and we're all stuck inside his wacky Broadway nightmare.
I've got a theory we should work.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about the 20-year anniversary of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with James South. He's an associate professor of philosophy at Marquette University.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you a fan of the show? What was it that got you into it? Have you watched, maybe rewatched it over the years? What made it click for you? Do you see its footprints in other shows or movies, pop culture in general since? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And James, I want to ask you, I mean, this is something that, for instance, Rob and I watched when we were, I'm going to say growing up, or were we in our 20s?
Yeah, oh, I was
you don't
growing
want to go
up.
There.
Yeah, so I was growing up-ish. Yeah.
I wonder if it holds up now, I guess is what I'm getting at here. You know, when you're young, maybe you're ripe for this kind of thing, which can feel a little overwrought, these big issues, you're fighting good and evil. I mean, have you watched it now? Does it still hold up the way some really great shows don't seem to 20 years later?
Well, I am perhaps biased, but yes, I think it does hold up. I think the acting is still fantastic. I think the writing is still witty and not dated in any way at all. I think they made a very conscious choice to minimize technology in the show. So after the first season, you don't really see very much technology in the show, so it doesn't look dated, except occasionally in the fashion department. And so, yes, I think it's, you know, the themes resonate. I teach a course on the show from time to time. Students who, you know, were too young to watch it when it was on, watch it and find it very appealing, find it very moving, find it very something that they still relate to and that they see the influence of in so much other television. As I said, you know, this is sort of the beginning of one person running a show on a shoestring budget on a small network. You have to remember back when it aired, there were very few networks on television, and now we have all these boutique networks that show these shows like Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or any of these other shows, Mad Men, which I've also edited a book on. You had a vision. You had somebody who knew what they wanted to do and wanted to say, but they got a lot of that from Joss Whedon.
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jennifer's with us from south of the border in Hoffman Estates. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm listening with my son, who's 13, and his name is Xander. the series got me through my entire pregnancy.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we watched it as a family, had a lot of fun watching it. I have to say, there's episodes that will forever stick out. The death of Buffy's mom, how Joss handled that. The love triangle between Spike and Angel, it's always topics for discussion when I find people who love the series.
And do you watch this with Xander?
Yes, he's watched the entire series, and then we moved on to Angel after that.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing that. I guess it's like baby Mozart, but baby Buffy, because she was watching while she was pregnant. And do you hear that a lot, people sharing it with their children, James?
Oh, I do, yes. I think people my age and younger or older share it with their children, their grandchildren. It's also the kind of show that gets passed around. I mean, I have a colleague who mocked me for years that I read on Buffy the Vampire Slayer until I finally challenged her and said, have you ever watched it? And the next thing I know, she's watched the entire series. So,
Jennifer, thanks a lot for that. Appreciate the call. And we go next to Sarah in Madison. Sarah, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in, you know, say that I concur. I think the show is amazing, and it does hold up over time. Both my teenage daughters and I watched it, and I was really excited when they finally got to an age where I felt like they could handle, you know, some of the scenes and whatnot. But I enjoy watching it with them because it's great entertainment, but I also think, you know, that she and many of the characters are just really great role models, as weird as that might sound.
Sarah, I want to ask you, now that you've watched it, now that you're older, were there parts of it that resonated differently that you maybe went over your head when you were younger, but now they kind of hit you hard?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry I can't speak to that too much, because I was kind of a late arriver myself. It, like the guest was saying, a friend of mine turned me on to it when probably 12 years ago or so. So I had little kids, and it was kind of like a guilty pleasure that my husband and I would enjoy after they went to bed. We'd watch an episode or two. And, you know, but at the time, you know, watching it, I thought, wow, this is like so entertaining. But at the same time, there's a deepness to it. And there's some really great new things that I had never seen before in TV, and you know, just different approaches that I really appreciated.
Sarah, thank you so much for that call. And I want to ask you, James, do you think that, and maybe this is going way over the top, you know how with Shakespeare you reread it, you find something new every time. Is there something like that in Buffy?
I think there is. I mean, that is every time I watch, prepare for, when I'm teaching the class, when I rewatch episodes, when I just sometimes am in the mood to watch the show again. I mean, you played a little snippet from the musical. I mean, I have the soundtrack on my iPhone. I listen to the you know, I rewatch the musical episode all the time because it was something that they never should have been able to pull off, and pulled off brilliantly. And managed to advance the plot along with it and reveal something very, very important along the way. So, yeah, I think every time I rewatch it, I mean, there's the occasional clunker episode there, but most of the episodes hold up really well. And each time you see something a little different, hear something a little different, realize that something they said in season three pays off in season six, and you just go, wow, how did they remember that? They must have been watching it obsessively as well.
Sarah, thanks so much for that call. We'll go next to Tim on the line in Spring Green. Tim, hi.
Hey, guys. First of all, thank you so much for talking about this. It's wonderful to hear. I also have to add real quick that as a classical actor who does a lot of Shakespeare, that I think that Joss Whedon is in the same world, that he uses he uses history, he uses fantasy, he uses things like that to tell us important stories about what it means to be a person and to be human. And my favorite thing about the show is always that he didn't lie to you. I mean, you know, yeah, he had one of his best episodes was called Lie to Me, but like he used all of these these fantasy elements to talk about things that nobody else really talked about quite as much. I mean, you know, you have a werewolf to talk about teenage adolescent sexuality. You have, you know, Buffy when she loses her virginity, and then the boy that she loses it with changes into a demon the next day. You know what I mean? And like all this other stuff, ways of talking about all these painful experiences that we all have growing up, and just giving it that little fantastic twist so that we could see it.
Tim,
more holy.
Thanks so much. A Shakespearean actor in Spring Green. What are the odds? I want to pursue that theme by listening. Speaking of, unexpected people talking about things, Anya, demon turned human, getting ready for a funeral. Buffy's mom. Here's an interaction here.
Are they going to cut the body open?
Oh, my God. Would you just stop talking? Just shut your mouth. Please.
What am I doing?
How can you act like that?
Am I supposed to be changing my clothes a lot? I mean, is that the helpful thing to do?
Guys.
The way you behave.
Well, nobody will tell me.
Because it's not okay for you to be asking these things.
But I don't understand. I don't understand how this all happens. How we go through this. I mean, I knew her, and then there's just a body. And I don't understand why she just can't get back in it and not be dead anymore. It's stupid. It's mortal and stupid. And Xander's crying and not talking. And I was having fruit punch. And I thought, well, Joyce will never have any more fruit punch ever. And she'll never have eggs or yawn or brush her hair. Not ever. And no one will explain to me why.
And James, you don't have to be an ex-demon trying to understand what it means to be human to have these or similar questions when you're getting ready for a funeral.
But I think there are also questions that we so often don't ask ourselves when someone close to us dies or someone that we know dies. We don't ask about those quotidian aspects of life that they'll never enjoy again, that they will never experience again, never having fruit punch again. I've never thought about that in relation to someone who died. It took Joss to reveal that to me, right? That is, in fact, essential to the process of death. You're never going to have fruit punch again.
And we've got another caller here. Let's go next to Daniel in Platteville. Daniel, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I actually like to say Joss Whedon is an amazing writer. I mean, everything that he actually goes for and actually writes about, starting with, like, Buffy, and then all of a sudden even into a shorter series like Firefly, he just brings, like, this whole another level that just keeps resonating through time. And it's great.
Daniel, thank you for that. And so Firefly, another series created by Joss Whedon, there's also that facility with language that the characters of Firefly have along with the characters of Buffy. And he sees something almost timeless, which I guess brings us back to that classical sense of drama and life and death, James.
Yes. Well, the early death of Firefly is something to mourn as well. But the language of Firefly is itself unique. It's Western, it's contemporary, it's futuristic, and it's interspersed with Chinese. And the actors and the performances there, the subtext of the show is very, very dark, and yet they're funny and quippy and everything else like that. In fact, quippy may be a Buffyism, right?
And James, where do you see the descendants in the TV and movie world of Buffy the Vampire Slayer today? Who do you look to as modern examples?
Well, it's amazing how many people point to Buffy and go, we didn't know we could do that with television. So, I think of somebody like Matthew Weiner who did Mad Men and used many of the actors from Buffy and Angel in that show and realized they could tell a story over multiple years, and you could follow the characters over multiple years and take themes and develop them and look at them from different perspectives. On the more contemporary scene, I'm thinking about a show like Westworld, which I'm currently working on a book about. And the questions about what it is to be human, the difference between human and machines, the responsibilities we owe to other creatures, who's evil, who isn't, the twists and the turns. And again, that's very auteur television. It's Jonathan Nolan, who's a brilliant writer and television director. And those are the kinds of descendants and offsprings, I think. Yep. Buffy set the path for being able to do that multi-layered, multi-year. You can make a reference to something that happened in season one and season seven.
Have to leave it there. Thanks to James South from Marquette University. He's written on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Marquette will be holding an academic conference studying the show April 1st in Milwaukee. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.